Welcome to Faces of CI, Conversations in Contact Improvisation. My name is Aaliyah, and we're here on unceded Coast Salish territory on Salt Spring Island for the 6th Annual Contact Improvisation Festival. And I'm joined here today with Andrew Harwood. Would you like to introduce yourself perhaps a bit, where you're from, and also how did you come across contact improvisation?
Really by chance. This was back in the 70s, in 1975 or early 76. I happened to already be dancing for about a year, doing improvisational composition and some modern dance technique for about a year with a woman by the name of Linda Rubin in Vancouver. And Nita Little happened to come into town, and Linda invited her to her studio to teach a one-off class, a master class in contact, which I did and quite liked. So it was really just a drop in the bucket. And 6 months later, one of the people in the group that was studying with Linda also brought Nancy Stark Smith to Vancouver to teach a 5-day intensive. And it was a small group of 14 or 15 people for a week. And we quite loved it. And I kind of, with a smaller group within that group of 7 or 8 people, we decided to continue on our own after Nancy left, because we were so taken with the work and so excited about it that we felt we wanted to pursue it, continue it. And there was no one around teaching this work at the time. Prior to that, I had no real dance training or improvisational training in dance, but I had a lot of training in gymnastics. I'd done a lot of team sports, athletics, yoga, martial arts. So I was primed in a way for contact. I had a lot of tools already, and that sense of adventure and that sense of collaboration in, like, for instance, when you're doing sports work, you're working with a team of people, and I liked that atmosphere a lot. It really spoke to me. And the fact that it was somewhat risky, somewhat unpredictable, as opposed to, you know, knowing everything that's going to happen ahead of time, that spoke to me a lot. So that was my beginning, and it flourished very quickly.
This was at, like, maybe Western Front, because you're in Vancouver.
Exactly.
But you're originally from Montreal, or you're not?
I am originally from Montreal. So I moved to Vancouver to work for my elder brother's health food store, at his health food store.
Okay.
And I've been working there since I was 20. And at the age of 23, dancing came knocking at my door, basically. So I wasn't looking for it. Mm-hmm. It sort of appeared in my life at the right time, and I felt like I met the right people at the right time. The circumstances were perfect, and I kind of tumbled into it sideways, so to speak, you know, not really searching for it, but it came about, and it was something that was just happening, just beginning to develop, and I kind of got in the front door, not quite, but close to the beginning.
Yeah, this is the origins of contact in Canada, kind of this Western Front.
And the Western Front was kind of already a place where Linda was teaching dance there, but it was an artist complex. It was there was a lot of visual art going on there, a lot of music, dance downstairs on the main floor. Lots of activities were going on there. And since that day, Linda at one point moved out to another space. That space has been retained in the Western Front as a dance studio, and now run by Peter Bingham, who has his own company called EDAM, like the cheese, EDAM, which means experimental dance and music.
Yeah, that's where I first started, and I would always say EDAM, like the dance, not the cheese.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. Amazing.
Yeah.
And then how has this developed within Canada and within your local community, and also with your teaching abroad since then?
Good question. I think about a year into practicing contact with the smaller group out of Nancy's workshop, about a year later, I thought I'd start offering classes, not really having that much experience, but there was no one else doing that at the time. So I started offering classes at the Western Front in the evenings. Actually, I'll go back, I'll backtrack a second, because in the work group, we had decided that each of us would take turns facilitating the group. We'd arrive with some idea and we would guide the group for 45 minutes. Then we would jam, then we would talk. So that was actually, without knowing it, my first teaching experience. But it was within really safe parameters. I knew the people. People weren't paying to come to class. I had nothing to prove. I was just trying things out, as was everyone else. Then a year later, I thought, I want to teach this material to other people. And I was very nervous about it. I didn't feel very secure. But I started, and I was totally overprepared for classes, very technical, lots of techniques for contact. That was my beginning. And it sort of expanded gradually, you know, sort of teaching a little bit, maybe outside of Vancouver and Burnaby, down in Seattle a bit. And then one other person and I applied for a Canada Council grant with the idea of taking this work across Canada. And at the time, there were these galleries known as the parallel galleries across Canada. They were visual art galleries, but they hosted sometimes these occasional workshops. So we got in touch with them. We applied for a Canada Council grant. We got the grant.
Amazing.
We traveled across Canada. We taught weekend or four-day workshops, and we would do a demo, informal performance demo at the end of it. And that went all the way across. And I did that twice. I did it once with Michael Linehan at the beginning, first time, I mean, 77. And then in 78, I worked with Peter Bingham and Helen Clark as a trio in contact. And we did the same thing. We did another tour across Canada. We also got another grant for that.
Wow.
So we were very fortunate, but this work, it was to expose the work, bring it across Canada all the way. You know, Saskatoon, Calgary, Edmonton, Toronto, Montreal, Halifax, St. John's, Newfoundland, all the way across. And it was pretty exciting, you know. We had groups of people, 20 people come to workshops. We had 50, 40, 50, 60 people come to our demo performances. And that sort of really launched my career. I had the good fortune of being able to work for my elder brother at his health food store, so I could go away and come back and still have a job.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah.
For about 2 years. And then I leapt out from working at the health food store and kind of never looked back.
Yeah.
I was able to make a living teaching and doing some performance. And that led to meeting all kinds of other people in the contact circuit as it was exploding, really.
Yeah.
It became quite a quick, people latched onto contact very, very quickly. And it spoke to people who didn't necessarily have any dance training, but people who were really interested in this type of spontaneous way of interacting and moving. So it wasn't about choreography or following steps, but listening and tuning and moving together in physical touch, which is, of course, a wonderful form of communication. That led to eventually, you know, people taking workshops with me and saying, come to my community type thing. So word of mouth. People who really enjoyed the workshop, enjoyed the performance or the teaching, and that led to more and more work in the States, more and more people to collaborate with, and then eventually, you know, 5 years into it perhaps, going to Europe. I had a very strong association early on with Nancy Stark Smith. I went to Naropa Institute in Boulder to assist her a couple of times, and then eventually perform with her and other people, then ended up teaching in Amsterdam with her and Alito Alessi and a few other people. And then the sort of the European circuit opened up for me. And it's just kind of gone on from there. And it's been very broad, very wide, very full. And now it's diminishing again. At the end of my career, things are coming back closer to home and not out there in the world so much.
Yeah,
I've done that a lot over my life, and there are periods of time I've been on the road for 7 or 8 months of the year, a long time. Now it's a smidgen here and there.
Yeah.
2 months of the year I'm gone. Most of the time I'm home now.
Yeah. How do you manage or balance that, this whole like traveling aspect and going into different communities and then coming back and having maybe a sense of stability, or is it just something that's like you have to naturally be have this disposition of wanting that as
Absolutely.
A contact teacher at the same time? I'm
totally
kind of going
right.
between Bali, Thailand, Canada, and seeing if there's more later.
Totally
but
right.
But I'm questioning if it's something that I want or have
I feel
to manage
very,
it.
Very comfortable at home, away from home.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm a Sagittarius. Sagittarius yeah. loves to travel. Travel's part of their makeup, I suppose. And so traveling was exciting to me, really exciting. And truth be told, it got me to visit the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to go to all these wonderful countries, meet these people, different languages, different cultures. And that was exciting to me. I was never kind of, I didn't feel insecure about that. But the great thing is I always had a base I could come back to. I wasn't nomadic in the sense that I didn't have a home to come back to. I always had a place in Montreal, which has been my home base. So I moved from Vancouver back to Montreal in 1980. And, you know, I've been doing contact for 4 years. I got a part-time position at Concordia University, teaching this kind of work in a, basically a university college curriculum. Mm-hmm. And I've done that a lot in Montreal in different venues, the University of Quebec, the Contemporary Dance School of Montreal, the Cirque du Soleil, the National Theatre School.
Wow.
And these are all programs where very young, 20 to 23, 4-year-olds are learning a craft, basically. And the directors of those programs have valued this work. So they invited me to come in as a teacher for a semester to complement the training that they were doing. So I got to teach in those particular settings, which are very unique and very different than, say, the situation here on Salt Spring Island, where it's people come from all walks of life. People do all kinds of things, and they're passionate about contact, but they're not aiming to become professional dancers or theater actor people or whatever. In a very specific training program.
We don't have an objective here. It's more to have a good time versus in a university. There's
it is to have a good time and
yeah.
to spend time with people.
Yeah.
So in that sense, yeah, the orientation is very different. The reason for coming is very different as well. And not everybody's 20 years old here. You know, people are from their early 20s into their 70s here. So it's a global representation, and that's very different than a very strict frame for young students to learn, to become, to develop a career in a very specific way. And I like that. I like both, actually, and I can easily shift from one to the other. There was a very particular school in Amsterdam called the School for New Dance Development that existed in the 80s that I and many others who did contact were invited to. And the work there was a little bit less than a contemporary or a modern dance school in that the emphasis was on somatic work and improvisation. And it was a 3-year program that students did, but the orientation was very different. And I had the opportunity to go there a couple of times, and that was marvelous, remarkable. But I also get invited to these kinds of festivals, contact festivals, intensives that people set up where I go for a week and I teach from 9 to 5 for a whole week.
Does the curriculum perhaps change if you're teaching theater students, you do something more theatrical, circus students, they want more tricks, you know, you kind of can adapt contact to these different areas, right?
You got it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's challenging. You know, I taught at the Cirque du Soleil. I did it twice. And after the second time, I realized I didn't want to teach there, actually. Because exactly as you said, they wanted to do all these tricks.
Mm-hmm.
And they got bored very quick. So they had no patience of doing, like, process-oriented work. Take your time to develop something. Work with it. Develop it. It's like one trick after another. And they got bored really quick. They wanted something new all the time to do. And, of course, they're superheroes, you know, they can do phenomenal things, but they're not patient. They're not interested in the deep undertone of contact, which I think is exceedingly important.
Mm-hmm.
And to have that kind of work. It's a little different in the contemporary dance school. They're open to that a little bit more, but yes, I have to adapt, of course, mm-hmm. to the needs and to the context that it's in. But that pushes me as a teacher. That's always kind of like, what do I have to offer and how can I get across to them, given what their training is and what their desires are? And, you know, here I can come in quite open and feel it out and go with the flow, and sort of how people respond to me as I'm teaching informs me. So it kind of gives me the information I need to continue the next class or over a period of time. Having said that, I might come in still, even in this context, with a theme. You know, I often have a theme, like for instance, compositional awareness in contact improvisation is what I'm working with here. And in the last couple of years, that's been a great interest of mine. Earlier on is really about techniques and skills, and that could be flying techniques, that could be falling techniques, that could be dealing with flow, whatever. And so it's interesting. It's really been exciting to me. So yeah, theater, circus, modern dance schools, and contact community. That's a pretty broad range.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
But I've loved that, actually.
Yeah, and it's interesting to go from technique into these deeper things of composition. You're working with time, working with space,
yeah,
these kinds of things, and trying to kind of get people who want the skills to go a little deeper, I find sometimes doesn't always translate. And then the more you get into it yourself, then you realize there's this vast thing, like you said, underneath that's
yeah,
actually holding it up. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you want to share a bit about kind of like the workshop you were teaching the last 2 days here at Salt Spring? 2 days is a bit short. We all wanted more.
but it was like we covered
quite a lot. And I was like, yeah, oh, this is very beautiful. The things we were working with were art to me. Like
yeah,
in the room, like we look around the room and like observe. Like we are art. We are part of the thing that we're creating here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, in contact, when I first started doing contact and when people, beginners, the focus is on contact.
Mm-hmm.
And the focus is on what me and you are doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important. And I so appreciated and so loved Leilani's class yesterday, mm-hmm, that she offered a class. And it was so nicely constructed, simple, very clear, from the ground up, literally, you know. But all that, the work on exchanging weight, how you give weight, where you give it, alignment, what that's all about. And it's an organic process. Alignment is not something fixed, all those things. But gradually, to be honest, over the years, I've almost been doing it for 50 years now. And so as a teacher and as someone who loves this work, it was important to me at a certain point to branch out, to reach out, to be. And I became interested in other things that surrounded contact. They completed it for me. And because also I've been a performer and interested in performance. And so being insular in a contact duet, having lots of techniques that I can rely on and use and integrate into the dancing at a certain point wasn't enough in terms of performance. You know, when I go to jams sometimes, I find it's fascinating, it's interesting to a degree, but it stays kind of homogenous in a certain way. And people aren't concerned with necessarily with the performing aspect of it. What's it like to be in front of an audience, to be seen? How do you watch? What's going on? What's interesting about it as a performing art? And having done it a lot, I learned over the years what was aesthetically pleasing and what wasn't, basically, mm-hmm, you know? So I started to become interested in composition, and I started to become interested in space, and I started to become interested in a relationship with the people who are watching, mm, consciously,
yeah,
being aware that you're being watched, and even to a certain degree being able to relate to them, not pretend that you were behind this veil or curtain being watched, but that you had a real live relationship. Most of these performances in contact and improvisation are in very intimate settings. They're not huge audiences of 2,000 people. You know, you have a space where there's 50, 60, 100, 120 people, and you can see people. They're right there in the audience. It's not like a void, a black void out there. And I know I'm being seen, and I can look out and see people seeing me and relate to them and connect sometimes. And I feel that's really nice. Just like I want to do that with the other people that I'm performing with on stage. Mm. I don't want to just be immersed in what we're doing if there are many duets
jam,
going on.
Yeah, in the jam context, it usually is what's happening. You usually do get immersed, I find, in the duet. And there is this less of a focus on the witness or on the room in general.
Exactly. So, yeah. And to me, that's important. And so I would have offered more classes, getting back to only offering two. But, you know, I'm grateful to be here. Last year, I was the main teacher. I taught five of these sessions. And I loved it so much, I said to Manu and Selena, I want to come back. Will you have me back? And they said, yes, but you won't be the main teacher this year, but we'd love to have you back. And Manu said, you know, the work that you offered last year that has this compositional awareness element to it, we'd love you to pursue that again. I said, I'm happy to do that. So, you know, a little smidge of it here and there. But that's been lately the thing that I've really been enjoying a lot, teaching that aspect of the work. And to me, it's a bigger umbrella. It encompasses more, and it encompasses states and climates and moods that are happening and shifting and changing in the room. It's like the weather, you know, it changes. Mm-hmm. And it can get very quiet, and it can get very bubbly, and it can get chaotic. You know, and those moods are nice to recognize, just like little shifts, like out here in nature. Here we are, we're having this conversation, and there's all this life going on around us. Mm. I'm not looking at it and focusing it all the time because I'm having a conversation with you. Nonetheless, that's going on.
Yeah, it's still a part of it.
And it's the same in a jam, you know, and that's a consciousness. That's a kind of a expansion of my awareness and of my consciousness that gets developed. And all you need to do is remind people and say, practice it. Practice being aware of what's going on in the room. It takes time.
Yeah.
It took me a long time.
Yeah.
But I'm fascinated with that now. So I can be inside out and outside in all at the same time.
Yeah. And do you think, so the just like supporting practices of tuning, like through meditation, and this also brings this type of level of a different kind of awareness. And if you have that and someone says things, then you're attuned to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, similar.
You've been to the morning practice, the contemplative.
I have, yeah.
And you know, yeah. It's very special.
Yeah.
It's a kind of work that's akin to contact. It's not contact per se, it's broader. But I think that we having a beginning that we all sit together quietly, and then having a closure where we can discuss what went on is very satisfying to me.
Yeah. Can you describe for people who don't know what this is? Contemplative dance?
Yes. Yeah. I can describe it. You know, usually on day one, I sit down and I explain what the format is very clearly. Then I feel if there are newcomers coming every day, I'll go through that routine of just saying, this is the form. We go through this, 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 this. I'm the timekeeper. I do it with you. You know, and basically it's three phases. We meditate together. We do a personal warm up all together. That's not guided. You do your own. And then it's open space where we can come and go and witness. And then close with a discussion. In Montreal, we have a jam that happens every week. There's no opening to it, so people can come and go, just like here. They show up an hour later, they leave an hour early. And we have a little closing circle, and the closing circle basically is not an open discussion. It's everybody says a little something, and often it's like you can use sound and a gesture to express how you felt. And it's a little theatrical moment for people, some people. Some people just say something, you know, I was really inspired by this or that today. And it's very short and sweet. But in the contemplative dance, I feel it's a meatier discussion. We're talking about topics like, well, composition comes up, or noticing things that happen in the space, or states of being, and it's an open forum. And so there's closure also. And I like that very, very much. Sometimes I miss that a little bit in contact, that we have that beginning together and closing together.
Yeah, it's helpful to have this this balance between framework and ability to do our own thing. So per se, but having this framework of being held unifies people in the room as well as like this is the direction that we're going in. And we were talking about that even of like, you know, the rules, quote unquote, for the festival, there is this manifesto and we understand where we're all going together with this event and how important that is.
Absolutely.
To have these things not from a place of control, but perhaps safety and mutual understanding of
And respect. Yeah. And consent and all of that. And actually that manifesto, I read it and I was very impressed with it personally. And I told Manuel and Selena that they had done a great job with that. It's very clear. It's very articulate. They covered pretty much all the bases without it being overwhelming, but very thorough.
We'll be back with our latest guest shortly. I wanted to share for a minute about our amazing opportunity coming up in Bali. There will be a Momentum facilitator training. So if you've come before to Momentum, it's the beginners contact skills workshop that I've run about 20 times, a two-day intensive for beginners to learn not only the basics, but also supporting practices, understanding how to listen somatically and tune in with the group, as well as in duets. From the ground up, we work from floor work all the way up towards small lifts. So this is the workshop that I started running in Bali in 2020, and it's since run over 20 times. I recently shared it here in Canada as well. And I've developed it into a facilitator training. So for those of you who would like to be able to share Momentum in its entirety and have that as a career for yourself, there's an opportunity to learn and to do so. So this training is going to be in Bali November 4th to the 13th. There will be more information in the show notes if you wanted to click a link to find out more. We have a beautiful venue at Kayu Mama. There's a sauna, there's a restaurant. And I'm not going to be just sharing Momentum. It's also going to be, you'll have access to Contact Body. So that's the online version of Momentum. There's resources for how to learn contact in that form, as well as our guides on how to facilitate contact jams, as well as, you know, I've done a ton of training before in how to teach, how to facilitate, how to be in a role of leadership, how to deal with traumas and triggers that might come up for students. So these are the things that we're going to be covering over these 9 days together. So for more information, take a look in show notes, and we're going to be back with our guest in 4, 3, 2, 1, clap.
Yeah.
Do you want to speak perhaps to any challenges you have in contact as a dancer or as a teacher?
Well, the main challenge now is injury and age. You know, that's the thing that I'm dealing with. And, you know, we had a topic yesterday, I think, about belonging. So that's an issue for me. It's a funny thing to bring up. But honestly, you know, that place of where do I belong now in the world of contact? Where is contact at now, just generally speaking? Because it's going through this what I would call adolescent phase of contact. It's out of its infancy.
50 years and it's adolescent stuff.
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do.
I'm curious why.
Well, you know, when I first started contact, some of the concerns that we have that are really important now didn't exist back then. Consent, sexuality mixed in. Other things mixed into contact, tantra, tango, ballroom dancing, you know, it gets mixed now. And I question that, you know, people have different ideas of what contact is. People have different ideas about how we touch and what's okay and what's not okay. Some people have a lot of tolerance for being touched in any way. And some people have very little tolerance from being touched in certain ways. And then there's intention behind that. You know, to me, contact has always been and remains primarily a physical discipline. It's not therapy for me. Mm-hmm. It's not about sexuality for me, although I am a sexual being. I don't emphasize that. I'm here to practice a movement form with other people. And I'm not there to check out the scene, you know, to cruise the scene. I'm not out to pick up someone, you know, but that's been a big issue. Even some teachers I felt like are a lot more permissive than I am, and I question that sometimes. I say, boy, they're slightly encouraging touching certain ways that for me is crossing the line, mm-hmm. for instance. So those kinds of issues weren't so prevalent when I was beginning the work, but they have surfaced. And I think it's not just with contact. It's a change in society. It's mm-hmm. much bigger than that.
So
and
adolescent now, phases, we're having to understand these concepts that are now being introduced into
exactly.
the scene.
As exactly.
Before it was clear.
Yeah. Okay. And sorting out what contact actually is. Because, you know, if you go to, for instance, a touch and play session, mm-hmm. and, you know, maybe touch is viewed in a very different way. What the boundaries are very different, and you get very accustomed to that. And then you come into a contact scene and you bring that awareness, that consciousness, that permissiveness into the contact scene. It starts to become a little confusing.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a young person and you come into a scene where communities are very different in contact, which is also very interesting. You know, I've been to South America, Argentina, where people are used to touching. They're very warm. They're very cuddly. And so they cuddle around on the edge at a jam, and they're stroking each other, they're giving each other massages, that kind of thing. You go to other places in Europe, and it's not like that at all. People are really, you know, they're very respectful, they don't touch each other in certain ways. They're not as touchy-feely, let's say. So that goes with the culture. You know, if you go to Japan, I suppose it's very different. You know, if you're brought up with, like, touch being something very delicate in public, you know.
I actually interviewed Yasukichi, so she's been teaching the contact scene in Tokyo for the last 20 years.
Wow.
And she's very, I took her workshop during tours, and she's very sweet, and it's very almost this sense of childlikeness and mm-hmm. care, and she's brought in Nancy Stark Smith and a lot of the teachers to make things happen there, but it was, I don't think they're afraid of touch, but it is more from a place of gentleness, uh-huh. I would say,
yeah.
based on their culture. So it's
okay.
very nice to see.
Well, would you actually say reserved a little bit or not?
Oh,
not
yeah,
quite?
She's reserved.
yeah.
But it's like a sweet.
But
a
I mean,
sweetness
reserved in
a
the culture a little bit too.
Yeah, they're.
But caring, nonetheless.
Yeah.
Very sweet.
Care.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. I've never been over there to Asia.
Yeah.
Pretty much everywhere else, you know, mm. all over Europe and Russia and South America, Mexico and the States and Canada and Australia. So I've traveled around a lot, and it's interesting. Some communities are much more interested in slow flow. Some places it's very dynamic, very technical, wild almost, and some places it's very casual.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I feel like I'm just trying to figure out my community because I kind of got perhaps locked into Bali and then just started teaching just because it was what was needed at the time. There wasn't anybody doing technique and this stuff. But it does have this touch and play feel at a lot of the jams.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
speak out with this and change it, it's starting to change a little bit. Like there's more teachers from Russia coming over since the war. So they're teaching a little bit more technical and things are starting to change. Mm-hmm. But it's a bit... Mm-hmm. I don't know. So I'm feeling out different communities, and it is interesting to see who's there.
Yeah. I talked about aging and injuries. So
that's
a little bit part of my shift also, because certain technical things are hard on my body now.
Mm-hmm.
My body doesn't, you know, I'm 71 and I'm dealing with some injuries, knees especially. So to fold deep and to roll over my knees, it's not comfortable at all anymore. So to do that rolling that Leilani was introducing yesterday, I'd stay away from that because it's too difficult. But one of the things she mentioned is being able to keep weight moving. And I do that a lot. That's the way I'm able to take care of myself. When people give me weight and they don't necessarily know, I know. So I'm able to shift and move the weight and keep it moving so it's not heavy, it doesn't settle. It's not, and I avoid certain positions that are uncomfortable. But, you know, I wake up now in pain sometimes, some days. And I didn't used to. So that's kind of new in the last 4 or 5 years. My energy level's not the same. I don't have the same kind of stamina. But for a 71-year-old body, it still works pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm happy about that. And I can still dance. I can still move quite well. But there are a lot of things I can't do or avoid doing or that don't give me the same kind of pleasure that I had when my body was really healthy and younger.
Mm.
So that's cool, you know. I don't like a lot of weight anymore. I like to when Lonnie said she didn't like that so much yesterday too, and she liked working light, I put my two thumbs up and I said, yes, I'm there with you. I'm there with you. Lightweight, lightweight.
Yeah.
But what she also said about pouring weight in but expanding out as you do that, so helpful. It's so perfect. You know, if you dump all your weight into someone,
yeah,
it's
I'm
obviously
often
heavy.
This big star almost all of the time.
Yeah,
I'm doing all this stuff and I'm like, all I am is a star, but like it works and then I can quite flow easily with that. Without dumping on the partner.
So
I mean there's this balance between do I rest or keep going, and we all always have to take this knowing ourselves and self-responsibility for our body to avoid certain things as well. So,
and I rarely have long dances now.
Mm-hmm.
I have shorter dances that are 10 minutes, 15 minutes, or I weave between. I go and have a dance with someone and someone else at the jam and someone else. I can kind of get stir the space up a little bit, get it to be mobile and not so independently duets anchored in their own thing, but enliven the space and lighten it up and make short exchanges. So start to work as an ensemble in contact. And I'm really interested in that ensemble contact work.
Yeah, have the ability to change the space and kind of stir the pot of what's happening in the room in like kind of a fun instigator that way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I love doing that. I love doing that. And, you know, timing, you know, when's the right moment to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Or when's the right moment to do the opposite? It gets kind of wild sometimes and I want to tone it down.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been at jams where sometimes I feel it's on the edge of being dangerous. Someone's going to get hurt. I've sensed that. And sometimes I need to go and I feel responsible for either going to a duet and indicating through my dance with someone that it needs to be, you need to tone your dance down now because you're being a little, for lack of a better word, reckless in the space. And I sense it, you know, or the overall energy in the room is a little like chaotic.
Yeah.
So I can help shift and draw it. I want to draw attention to that so that people can see that too, and that they can then in turn take responsibility if it starts to go too far one way or too far another, that it's possible to indicate without having to use words, with your presence, with your beingness, that something needs to change now, something needs to shift.
Well, I felt like yesterday at the jam last night, we did have moments of a lot more like stillness and a group in the space. Towards the end, it did get into duets, but the first probably like 2 hours of it was this. And I was going into that state and others were as well. And it was really cool to watch that it had permeated into the jam later in the day. It was getting like arty and weird and good. I was like, oh, yes. Uh-huh. And Manuel was playing some kind of music that felt like Halloween. And there was a goat on the edge of the room. And it was just very weird. It was great. But yeah, we had this.
That's fun.
It was an art piece in a way.
So. That's fun.
Yeah. Do you want to share a bit? You said you were in Vermont and there was a collection of the original contact teachers a few weeks ago, and I'm curious about this. I wonder if you want to share it all.
Absolutely.
If you feel like sharing.
Yeah. Erica Kaufman, who's been doing contact for a long time, she lives, I think, close to Philadelphia, and she has been spending quite a bit of time in India and teaching there. She organized this about 2 years ago. She had this idea with someone else of having a gathering of the first and second generation of contact and teachers of contact. So site, contact improvisation teachers exchange. And it was X at the end of it for first generation, second generation. Which had never happened before, so it was by invite. It wasn't open to everybody, as other teachers exchanges have occurred around the world over many years, experienced and much, much, much older teachers who have been at it for a long time. So, wow, what a rare, special, privileged opportunity to meet some of the people I've had associations with over my career, but haven't seen in maybe 20 years, 25 years. I've danced with them, performed with them, been in the same festival with them, grown up with this work, basically. And all of us have taken it out into the world. And Steve Paxton came, And Steve doesn't travel or get around very much at all anymore. He's pretty much at his farm, and Lisa too. And Steve's old now. He's like 83. He's an older guy. but he still, you know, does conferences via Zoom sometimes and does his talks, but he doesn't teach or perform anymore. So to have Steve around, and Lisa Nelson, who also have been involved in work at the very beginning, and Danny Lepkoff, having these people around, Nita Little, you know, Jeff Bliss, myself, Chris Aiken, Angie Hauser, and it was a wonderful time. It was 4 days where every morning we just did a movement practice. We did contemplative dance in the morning.
Wow.
With some of the staff members. Many of us came. That's how we started our day. Then breakfast with nice little chats around the table, catching up. Then kind of like a jam, like here in the morning from 10 to 12, open. People would just dance together, and the dancing was magnificent, with a lot of older bodies, older people dealing with their own injuries, but very sensitive to each other. It was really fun. And then a chat before lunch, and then an afternoon would be discussion on different topics. And the first day was just the question was, what year did you start contact improvisation, and how old were you, and where were you, and who was your influence, or who were your influences? And to go around 25 people took the whole afternoon, just, and you know, people would talk a little bit more and elaborate a little bit here and there. So that was really fun. There's some people I didn't know. There were three or four people from the younger generation who were invited to be part of it too. But what a great opportunity. And Steve with his stories and talking about the beginning with Nita, who was there, and Danny, all of the, and Lisa were at the really very beginning, just to hear their stories and to their memories of what went on back then and what Steve's original idea was and how he was able to formulate and develop this work and create basically structures and tools to ensure safety in developing this work. But it was really just, as he said, it was just an idea in his head, yeah. You know, and how do you go from an idea into shaping that idea into form. And it was fascinating. And he's such a great speaker. And Nita too. So it was a fantastic exchange. And I think every single one of us loved it, really appreciated it. I went for 2 days out of four. I could only manage two. There were 25, 28 of us. And it was at a place called The Field in Vermont. I don't know if you've heard of this place. It's a new center for improvisation.
Wow.
And it's setting like this. It's in the country, in the woods. It's southern Vermont, about an hour from Northampton. And it's about research and development of somatic and improvised work. So contact's a very big part of it, not exclusively. And that's where we held this event. Jared, who's been doing contact, he's not either a first or second, but he manages the space. He's been doing it since 2000 or something like that, for 20 years, and a great host with a small crew. So I felt, it was very exciting. I felt very privileged to be there, to have some great conversations with some of my old buddies, some of whom I haven't seen in 20 years, that people I've danced and performed and taught with in the past. And so it was a great and very rare opportunity, perhaps, you know, one in a lifetime kind of thing. We're all, a lot of us who are there, in our 70s now, mid-60s, 70s. So, yeah, I don't know if something like that will ever happen again.
Yeah, it sounds like a beautiful opportunity, and to have this familiarity of dancers and this going apart and meeting again that happens throughout the contact community in our lives.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the dancing, when we had our morning practice sessions of dancing, they would start off without checking in, without having a format, everybody would start in their own little space. Duets would start to evolve out of that. And then it became ensemble contact work, mm-hmm. with three fours and fives and ins and outs. And Very much like that compositional awareness that I was speaking about without even mentioning the word compositional awareness. It was just there in the group. All of us with a lot of wisdom, very rich setting. It was great. It was fantastic. Wonderful. I hope it happens again.
Next year.
I'd love to be part of that again. Yeah. And I'd love to be part of this again, this scene here too. I think it's great having this Selena's land that she's offered us, being in nature, having this view. It's a great scene. Mm-hmm. It's very special. And I encourage a lot of people from my community in Montreal to come.
Yeah, we have quite a few. I'm asking around, and there's a lot of French Canadians.
A lot of French Canadians, a lot from Montreal. And I'm really happy they responded to it, and they're loving it. They're really enjoying it.
Amazing.
So word's getting out. This place, I'm sure, will grow and continue. Mm. Yeah.
What brings you the most joy in contact?
I think the most joy is simply the opportunity to meet. And when I say meet, it's the dancing, that meeting. It's the discussions that happen. It's not even so much, you know, when I was younger, it was all about the dancing. That was the thing. And that's fundamentally important. But it's the exchanges that also happen all around it, before and after and in between, and the watching and the witnessing and taking great pleasure in that as well. And just to know that this form, you know, it started very small, very grassroots, and it's grown into this worldwide phenomena. And, you know, that I've been part of that, you know, almost since the very beginning, and seen it grow and seen it expand, and, you know, still kind of questioning, where's it going? It's interesting, you know, where it was. And like I said, it's in its adolescence. I don't think the growth is not finished. And where is it going? And how is it affecting people in the world? I mean, people come to this work because there's something very valuable, special, intimate, rich about it. And I think that's why I love it. It's very rich. And it's a little, you know, this sense of belonging that I talked about before. It's like, as I traveled around the world and been in many contexts, how do I maintain my balance? Mm-hmm. How do I maintain balance in this? I'm good now at taking time away, even in these settings. I drift off. I need some time for myself. I don't need to or want to be in among and catch everything that's going on. Like the feeling of, if I don't attend everything, I'm going to miss something. I don't feel that way anymore. Yeah. I know that I need the time to retreat and absorb and be by myself in nature. And I think it's become very easy for me to find balance. When I was younger, I just did everything. You know, as a young student, I just went from morning till night, and I was exhausted at the end of the day and sore and tired the next day and just started over again. I do that for a month.
Yeah, I'm usually skipping out one thing a day, and I'm taking most of the meals to myself. And I always kind of question it, like, oh, this hermitude that I have, you know, I still want to come out and dance, but, you know, like moments of accepting myself for it and then like not. But it's part of it. Yeah, you can't do everything.
Totally.
Yeah, for sure, both for your body and to
actually
have
yourself,
like digestion and integration of what's going on. So it's super important.
And I feel very safe and comfortable in this community here, in this place. And it's not the same everywhere. You know, each gathering like this has its own flavor, its own rhythm, its own energy. But to me, it starts with the people who have the vision and organize it. Selena and Manuel. And I think they are really excellent at facilitating and having a vision that they can spread out. And they're very generous, they're very kind, they're very sweet people, and very thoughtful as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to be here. I hope to come again.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for sharing and
for your
time and energy and teachings and dancing and all of it.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
If people want to find out a bit more about you online, or if you have a website or something you care to share.
I don't have a website. People can write to me, you know, or they can Facebook me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not, Yeah, I don't have a website, but I'm available to communicate with otherwise.
Okay. Andrew Harwood, everyone.
Andrew Harwood. That's it.
That's it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All thanks. Right.